Liam McHale gets a good ball in. Noel Duncan is waiting inside. Will he field it? Noel Duncan has it. Noel Duncan lays it off to Larry. Larry scores the goal.
Oh, the green and red Mayo.
A litany of woes. Defeat snatched from the jaws of victory. Close calls. The story of Mayo football has been written on the script of hurt.
But a great never-say-die attitude. They've got three goals back.
I came 3,000 miles for this game in New York. And was worth every penny and every mile. And Mayo are going to be back next year. And we're going to be better.
Every year since 1951, Mayo fans have been left holding their faces in their hands as the county's best have failed to cross the winning line yet again.
From its rolling coastal waters, I can see Kilpatrick's Peak.
This year, the Green and Red Army began the championship adventure again, filled with new hope, guided by the irrepressible John O'Mahony.
This is a typical Thursday evening. I'm just leaving Dáil Éireann. I've been here since Tuesday morning early. Trained with the guys in Dublin on Tuesday night and heading home to Castlebar now to make it. Before 7 o'clock, we start at 7:30. And obviously the big thing is to try and get out of the city before the traffic. And some one or two evenings I was caught in it and it was a race against time. But for the most part I managed to get out and to get on the road. And I try and get my thoughts together obviously on the road, because there's lots of sessions. I remember back in the old days of managing years ago before the mobile phones, you actually could spend more time thinking and with your thoughts. But for now, sometimes the phones click on or whatever, and that breaks your train of thought. But I find it, I don't mind driving at all. I find it good to be with oneself and your thoughts. And at this time of year, the thoughts are championship and the intricacies of, you know, getting guys back from injury, getting everyone to the starting line fit. So here we go again for the 2009 championship. I suppose it's hard to believe it's 20 years since I was involved in my first period when we got to the All-Ireland in 89. Lost out narrowly on that occasion, and we've come up, played in four All-Ireland since that, 96, 97, under John Mahan, 04 and 06 under Mickey Moran, and we've come up short each time. I suppose 96 was the real one that got away, but I've no doubt that somewhere along the line people say to me, will Mayo win in All-Ireland? So, of course they will, but the question is when. You'd never know. The phone ringing now. Hello? Chair, how are you? It's just 10 to 7 here now. We're just after coming into Castlebar, so I'm looking forward to the session this evening, because after the long drive, and we need the, I can smell the grass cut there, and really looking forward to it. I think things are coming together.
For the next 2.5 hours, John makes the Mayo players toil in the evening sun. But like their county men before them, it could be that the gods have already decided their fate.
Come on, don't let the bloody thing bounce.
Right, next, come on, come on, right,
come on, off his shoulder, that's good. Right.
Legend has it that way back in 1951, a priest placed a curse on the Mayo All-Ireland winning team.
Come on,
okay, Kevin, that's it.
We've got a trend under 10. Come on, let's go.
Paddy Prendergast, Mayo team of the 40s and 50s. I don't know what to say about it, but it seems to have worked a bit for us. We were coming back from Dublin. This is the story I heard anyway. We were returning from Dublin after winning I don't know, was the 50 of probably the 51 all around. Sure, it must be the 51 or we wouldn't have won it if there's 52 of the course. And I think it was in Foxford. We were travelling by lorry. And the reason we're travelling by lorry, I suppose, was that we came through the very small towns, and Sean Flanagan, who was captain, stood up and made his speech, you know, and that. And he did the same at Foxford, saying they had a room saying, you know, the same day, the only thing warmer than a Foxford rug was a Foxford welcome. And while the story is that there was a funeral going through the town, I don't remember this, but that there was a funeral, and that we didn't come off the truck to let the funeral pass. When the priest saw us on the truck and noticed that we weren't getting off the truck to attend the funeral, he was evidently he was very angry, and he said, "Mayo will never win all Ireland while any of these people live." And if he did, he was right, because it doesn't look very promising at the moment. I can tell you that much. I have travelled for the last 40 years, you know, to Connacht finals, to Connacht semi-finals. And unfortunately, most of the time, I came back, you know, in despair, really, because most of the time we lost, unfortunately. And I always refer to that as my personal Via Dolorosa, that journey, that long journey of 40 years or more, you know, and no victory. It's unbelievable, really, isn't it?
Three generations of Mayo have suffered and mourned in this unique valley of tears. But yet the dream begins anew each year with a little boy and his first football. For Sean Frayne, the captain of the Mayo Miners in 1953, the dream was no different.
Football was very much part of kind of, I suppose, every father maybe thought of their son playing for, I don't know, for the club or the county. But my father had been secretary of the Connacht Handball Association. Unfortunately, he died a very young man as a result of illness that he incurred by being involved in the Troubles. But I actually just barely remember him. I was only 4 years of age when he died. On the Christmas after he died, my mother had a football for me. And it was one he had bought for me already. He had seen the war coming, I think, and footballs weren't very, couldn't buy them very easily in Kilkelly, where I was born. And so he had a football for me. I remember still a brown football, and we pumped it up, and I was out in the street kicking it on Christmas Day, and so excited with it. The summer of 1953, I went to the seminary in Maynooth. But then I went on that summer to be made captain of the Mayo Miners. And that was an extraordinary honour as well, to captain Mayo, and to be number 11, to play in the footsteps of the great Páirc Kearney was for me another great honour. He was one of my boyhood heroes. So I went on from there. As I say, we won the Connacht Championship. And then we went to Croke Park, went to play Armagh in the semi-final. And there I had my final game, because I was going to Maynooth. And of course, going to the seminary, I knew that I wouldn't be able to play in the All-Ireland. But that seems so strange to people today. I mean, my own children, my friends are constantly saying to me, my gosh, what was that like? And in a strange way, it doesn't strike me as having been the awful sacrifice it might appear now. I mean, in retrospect, I'm so sad that I didn't have the opportunity to receive the Tom Markham Cup. In fact, at the time, as far as I understand it, some rule was passed by the Irish hierarchy that priests wouldn't be allowed to play county football. And I think there were many victims of that rule subsequently. And in fact, a few fellows did and had to change their names, like Peter Quinn was Peter Quinlan, for example, playing for Mayo. He was a Columban priest. And there were several other examples of it, I think, around the country. I think Mick Cleary as well had, it was Mick Casey or something like that, playing for Dublin after his ordination. So it was certainly after ordination, there was no question of you supposedly playing. But this was when I was just a first year, just about 2 weeks in the seminary. Of course, it had a lot to do with with, you know, views of the role of the church and priesthood and so on as removing you from this world and its wiles and its evils or whatever, and preserving you for this holy role that you were expected to play in the church.
For 58 years, Mayo fans have been reared on a diet of defeat, each remembered like beads on a rosary. The domino of loss continues unabated, as final salvation still awaits.
A shortish one up the middle, John Neal going across, for goes to Willie McGee on the left. Willie has a chance of a goal here. He shoots now and it's over the bar.
Willie McGee, Mayo footballer of the 60s and 70s. We were professed to have had a good team during that time, and certainly the personnel were there all right, but apparently for some reason or other, I don't know what it was, we hadn't the killer instinct. During the time of my playing with Mayo, we had the will to win all right, but we hadn't that killer instinct built into us. I know there was a phrase that was used by different managements at the time, that when Mayo blood is red and Mayo grass is green, you know, we go out there to play football. And we certainly did play football to please. But we found ourselves oftentimes being kicked off the field and abused, something that was never driven into any of the Mayo teams that I ever played with.
After the match, supporters from both sides paid tribute to the spirit of the defeated Mayo team.
I think it's a great credit due to Mayo in their club support. I think it's the grandest, cleanest team I've ever seen to another Mayo team. I hope they're back again.
Willie Joe Padden, Mayo footballer. You know, when I started off playing for Mayo, you know, basically we were only training, you know, a couple of nights a week, and the training that time wasn't next or near as professional as it is now, or even as some of the teams in that era, the likes of Kerry and Dublin had, you know, had gone in leaps and bounds ahead of any other county because they were training four or five times a week. So basically, you know, I remember playing an All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry in 1981, and, you know, Mick O'Dwyer was in charge of that Kerry team. That was probably the best Kerry team, or the best team ever in the country. But the one incident in that game was that in the second half, obviously we didn't score in the second half, so the ball was constantly going over the bar or in the net, but Michael Webb was in goal on that team. And I remember him saying to me after the game, he was just wondering, when he kick out the ball, would he be back in goal again to kick it out before it's gone over the bar? So that shows you how much pressure we were under. Like, these guys were training four and five nights a week. Like, we were only training twice a week. So basically, we were grand up until half time. But when the second half came, you know, obviously we started to, you know, flag a bit. And, like, the Kerry guys were going at the end just like they were at the start. So basically, I just think that it's not maybe down to a win at all costs or the win at all costs mentality. I just think that, you know, we really hadn't the groundwork done before we went to the games, because we hadn't been, the training schedule hadn't been as, you know, as intense and as it should have been, you know.
We'll go with Bid Mayo. Do you think we'll go with Bid Mayo? Not if they have Willie Joe. They have no hope for Bid Mayo.
Often it seemed that Mayo's problems on the field were caused by the powers that be off the field. Decisions taken by the county board did not always seem to be in the best interests of the players. And on a rain-soaked afternoon in Castlebar, former Mayo legend TJ Gilgallon recalls an evening in 1992 when this self-destructive streak was particularly evident.
In 1991, we lost the Connacht final to Roscommon after a replay. John O'Mahony had completed 4 years of as manager at that stage. As far as I can recall, up to that point, he did not have his own selectors, and he asked the county board in the autumn of 1991, you know, could he nominate and use his own selectors. That wish was not granted by the county board, so it left John with no other option but to step down as a manager. And that was a big disappointment to the players, because a lot of the 89 team at this stage were perhaps past their peak, and he had started to develop a new team and had brought in a number of young players. And, you know, even though we were beaten by Roscommon, had a good team in the early 90s, and we felt that there was a lot to offer in the coming years for Mayo. So a huge disappointment to the players, and obviously, as I said, left John with no option but to step down. So what happened after that was the county board advertised the position. As far as I can remember, there were very few people who applied for it. The people who did weren't deemed to be qualified enough to manage a county senior team. So the county board then were left with no alternative but to put a management in place themselves, which they did, and they appointed a four-man management team that was fronted by Brian MacDonald. And Brian came in with every good intention, gave his time, gave his commitment, gave his effort, but there was many sort of confrontational moments throughout the one-year reign, and different issues arose. I suppose the most well-documented one, we're here in Castlebar in Dunstow's car park, where in around February of 1992, we conducted had a training session here under Brian. I remember the evening well. I had travelled from Sligo for training, and the weather was quite poor at the time, so it wasn't a surprise that there wasn't outdoor playing facilities in any pitch. But when we arrived to change in the dressing rooms at Castlebar and Mitchell's, and we inquired where we were training, it was a bit surprising to hear that there was no venue or no alternative venue had been found. So the management decided for us to have a run up the main road, and that they'd meet us up at Dunstow's car park. And initially we thought it was probably a joke, but we soon discovered that was the case, that it was going to go ahead there. And what I suppose was annoying me most was the fact that there was only about 14 players present. We had just returned to train after the Christmas break, because the league that time, three games was played prior to Christmas and the other four games afterwards. Personally, I was annoyed that we weren't being told where other players were. I had travelled from Sligo, other lads had travelled from Galway and from Belmullet. We gathered and we trained here in this car park, and at that time there was no 24-hour park, and so there was plenty of ample space to use the wide open car park here. And we did some drills and so on, but the end of the training session finished up with a car pushing race, where the four selectors sat in their big cars, Opel Records and so forth, and perhaps three or four players pushed each car the whole into the car park, distance probably of what, 150 metres or so. And then we finished and we jogged back to shower in Castlebar and Mitchell. So, you know, that, I suppose, that lasted in our memory and in our mind. And we did go on to win the Connacht title that year in Castlebar, a famous game in the sense that the crossbar broke in that game. Aonán Gavin went up to try and stop a Mayo score and pulled the crossbar down. At that stage, I think Roscommon might have been leading by a point or two, but the 10 or 15 minute break seemed to do us more good than Roscommon, because we went on to win the game, I think, by maybe 7 or 8 points. Well, there was a lot of disappointment after the end of the campaign in 1992. We felt we could have got that Ireland that year. We didn't. The performance against Donegal, the preparation, I think, going up to that game, we felt as players just wasn't good enough. And as I said, there was a lot of confrontational situations that year, and I suppose it all came to a boil at the end of that campaign. And the players met and just had a general discussion on it, and it was felt to a man that we couldn't as a group continue to play under the same management. And so there entered a standoff between the players and the management, and the county board tried to resolve it, but the players were adamant that if the management was staying on, that they weren't going to play. So you could say that was an example of player power. We just felt there was too many incidents and issues over the past 12 months that left players with no choice but to take their stance. So eventually the management did step down.
I don't want to talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me now.
Even by Mayo standards, 1996 was an abysmal year. 45 years on from their last All-Ireland, they faced Meath with real conviction that they were about to reach the promised land. But in the very last minute, a freak score where the ball bounced over the bar denied the dream. 2 weeks later, Mayo and his worldwide diaspora descended again on Croke Park for the replay. This was to be their day. But within minutes, the dream went sour.
Morris Sheridan's right boot makes contact. Conley gets across the goal. John McDermott blocks it. Plenty of defenders in there. John McDermott will man the broken. They're swinging around in there now. And John Casey going in. And they're all at it in there now. And this is absolutely disgraceful. No need at all. And there's practically 20 of the players there now. And they're coming from all sides. And the referee should take strong action now. And perhaps he should dismiss one or two right away if there's to be any order for the rest of the game. And they're still at it. Yes, there are two players going off. Colin Coyle is going off and Lee McHale is going off the Mayo team.
Paddy Prendergast, one of the few survivors of Mayo's last All-Ireland win, again made the long pilgrimage to support his beloved green and red. But that day, the fickle hand of fate had a new twist in his catalogue of disappointment.
Oh, 1996, Osha, dear sacred heart of God Almighty. I certainly wasn't impressed by the refereeing, you know, and that's for sure. In actual fact, he may be a good referee, but I wouldn't, if I met him on the street, I don't think I would bid him the time of day. So we lost our best man, and they lost our worst man, you know. And I can tell you there was very little justice in that. And it was terrible.
Over the next 10 years, Mayo contested bravely, reaching two more All-Ireland finals, only to lose on both occasions to the mighty Kerry. 2006 brought another shot at redemption. Billy Joe Paddon, like his father before him, wore the county jersey on All-Ireland final day.
Yeah, 2006, I suppose it's a great occasion to play in an All-Ireland final. I suppose it's very much a case of unfinished business for a lot of us, you know. The most disappointing thing for me personally, anyway, is that you did feel like you didn't do yourself justice. I suppose people come down fairly hard on Mayo teams and say, well, you know, you don't do yourself justice in Croke Park. I think that's slightly unfair. You know, there's plenty of times we've played excellent games in Croke Park. We beat Tyrone in 2004, we beat Dublin, you know, and beat a lot of solid teams there. But I suppose at the end of the day, the sign of a really good side or a team that's worthy of winning All-Ireland, you have to do it consistently and you have to do it on the biggest day, which is the All-Ireland final. And unfortunately, we didn't have enough. We didn't have enough as a team on the day, and didn't play well enough. You know, people can say what are the reasons for that? But at the end of the day, I think the buck stops with the players themselves. You know, you're responsible for your own performance on the day, and unfortunately, it wasn't good enough.
Ready? Who's the first receiver? Right, go! Now the ball stays in. Come on, meet it. Right, come on. Next runner. Come on, go. Yeah. Come on. Take it now. Take him down the bounce. Down the bounce.
The former Liverpool manager Bill Shankly famously said, football is not a matter of life and death. It is much more important. As he finishes his training session in Castlebar, John O'Mahony knows more than most the distortion of that comment.
Okay, that was I was happy with that session tonight. The journey I'm going on here on the way home is a journey I went many, many years ago as a player and with my colleagues from East Mayo on that particular occasion that I remember with not good memories is the journey that we went home from Castlebar one night after training with Ted Webb.
A Mayo senior county footballer, 21 years old, Ted Webb, was killed when the car he was driving was in collision with a train at a level crossing near Ballyhonus. The dead man was a member of the Mayo under-21 team that won the All-Ireland title in 1974.
Okay, we're just approaching a bend on the road here, and I suppose this brings it home to me more than anything, that fatal night on the Kilshamachal-Kelly Road as we turned off towards Ahamore. I'll never forget I was only beginning to drive at that stage, and the turn came on me more quickly than I thought, and I had to check, and there was a period where I felt that we may go off the road, and there's as you can see there, a soft landing in there, and maybe when I think back on it, if we had actually had an accident which that night, or if we went off the road or went into the ditch, Ted would be with us today. Where we are now is at the place where on the level crossing on the railway line where Ted met his God. And again, it's very difficult to put words on this because, for my own part, I left him at his house that night, went home, went straight to bed, heard the 8 o'clock news on the radio in the morning that a Mayo footballer had been killed in an accident, and I said to myself, well, it's not Ted Webb anyway, because I left him home safely last night. But the phone rang shortly afterwards and I got the terrible, terrible news. Now, for people who might know Ted Webb, in 2009 he was one of the brightest underage stars that Mayo was producing. I played with him on the 2 years earlier in an All-Ireland final, under-21 final, where Ted scored, according to Micheál Murcaithy, one of the greatest goals that was scored in Croke Park. He was a strong, physical player. I'd have known him particularly in East Mayo because Ballyhadrine and Ballyhaunas were at loggerheads in that period, and there were some great battles. Ted had didn't drink, was totally dedicated to the game, and was totally the type of player that Mayo needed in that period, because as we all know, the 70s was a period when that Mayo didn't win a Connacht title, and I have no doubt that if Ted Webb was around for the years when he should be at his peak for Mayo, that blank decade wouldn't be as blank as history shows it now. I suppose it was in the 70s. The fashion at that period was John Travolta, and many people said that he had the John Travolta look, with the black hair and the smile, except that Ted Webb did his entertaining on the football pitch, and I've all stars hadn't come his way at that stage, but I've no doubt that he would have been in that category if he had been granted a life and a career with Mayo. Well, I mean, what emerged was that Ted's uncle needed a lift home when he arrived in from training, and he literally threw down the gear bag, and I think Ted drove his dad's car was a Peugeot 405 at the time, and his uncle's residence was the railway line had to be crossed, and I suppose Ted was an excellent driver, far better than me, as I demonstrated on that particular night, but it was one of those unmanned crossings, and obviously he thought that he'd get across before it was an unscheduled mail train or something, and you know, that's where he met his death. I remember the funeral and the I suppose the grief and of the Ted's mum and dad, and any life, and any life in an accident particularly is tragic, but the life of a young person at the peak of his physical and athletic powers, and to be there on as Ted's remains were brought through the town of Ballyhaunas to their final resting place, the whole community of Mayo and indeed the GAA community throughout the country were with the Webb family on that occasion. I suppose what people say sometimes is that time is a great healer, but in certain cases, and this is one of them, when we think of Ted Webb, when we think of Mayo football, when we think of the red and green, when we think of, I'm sure, in Ballyhaunas, there are some places that have never been filled as a result of this tragedy that happened 33 years ago. I suppose for when you play football and when you have those friendships and those loyalties, to happen once is very difficult. But to think that 4 years later we had a tragic death and another tragedy of a murder of John Morley, who I've been speaking to only the morning that he was murdered, in a football context as well, because at that stage John had moved to Castlereagh and was playing football with Castlereagh. To think that the county had to bear the cross of that, of another tragedy and another murder and another loss to the people of Mayo and to the football community of Mayo.
Dermot Early, former Roscommon footballer, born in Mayo. We're standing here on the road between Loughlin and Ballyhadreen, in the parish of Loughlin, where I have grown up. And as I look around me, the trees are in good shape, the land is lovely and green, the hedges are in full bloom, and it's a lovely, peaceful place. And when I recall the 7th of July 1980, I recall a huge tragedy that occurred here when Garda John Morley and Garda Henry Byrne were killed in the line of duty. It's a small area, everybody knows everybody else, and then the incident was played out on the radio particularly.
A gang of armed and masked men raided the Bank of Ireland branch in the town and got away with a sum of money believed to be about £35,000. Within minutes, the alarm was raised and the Castlereagh Gardaí raced towards the scene to try to intercept the raiders. About midway between the two towns, they confronted the getaway car, but the raiders immediately opened fire on them, fatally wounding the two Gardaí. The raiders then sped away from the scene and are believed to have split into two groups, later hijacking two cars. Garda Byrne died almost instantly on the roadside at Loughlin. Detective Garda Morley was rushed to Roscommon County Hospital but died shortly after admission. The two other Gardaí in the patrol car were...
And one of the most vivid memories I have is of the explanation given by a former Garda Nifsi of Loughlin who came on the scene. And when he looked out, he said he recognised the footballer. And he spoke to him as he lay on the side of the road in the ditch. He was obviously bleeding, and John, in reply to a question, said, "I'm getting cold." And then Garda Nifsi said, "I whispered an act of contrition in his ear."
Mick O'Connell tells Paul O'Donoghue, "I'll take this." Paul, and that's just what he's doing. He takes it now and lobs it just into the Mayo half. Coming down 60 yards out, John Morley blocks it down to PJ Loftus, who can't hold on to it.
In some ways, Mayo has been in mourning for the last 58 years. But the tragic loss of Ted Webb and John Morley put sport into perspective. And their heroism on and off the pitch have ensured that they retain a special place in the hearts of all Mayo people. None more so than the county's most iconic figure, Willie Joe Patton.
I had the privilege of playing against John Morley in a club game, and the one thing I remember, he played for Ballyhadreen and I was playing for Balmorris in a league, club league game, and I remember standing beside him, and I was about maybe 17 years old, I think, at the time, and I remember standing beside him, and I just had one look at him. I said, "If this guy falls down on top of me, I'm killed." He had the biggest pair of legs that I've ever seen any man. But an absolute gentleman and a great footballer and a great servant of Mayo football indeed.
The first half, Mayo 2 points, Kerry 2 points, as Joe Corcoran sends that...
One of the particular memories I have of John is, I think, playing in the league semi-final or final against Down in Croke Park. In a game that was tight enough, I think Down won in the end. But one of the things that happened during the course of the game, with John playing centre half back, I can see him still in the number 6 jersey. But in the course of a tussle for the ball, he lost his shorts. And instead of stopping and sitting on the pitch or wanting to get a replacement pair of shorts immediately, he just carried on wearing a blue swimming trunks. The game was more important to him than his modesty. He caught the ball, dummied left and right, moved forward and delivered it onwards down the field. When a break in play came, the shorts were replaced, much to the huge delight of the crowd. But it was the makeup of the man that nothing would stop him from doing the right thing on the football field for his beloved Mayo.
Coming down 60 yards out from the Kerry goal, two Mayo men going for it. John Morley gets his fist to it, manages to get it on there to the waiting Des Griffith. Des with the ball now, rooted away by John Morley, eventually on to Joe Langan, 40 yards out from Mayo. Joe,
John Morley gave Mayo over half his life to the county jersey, and like many great Mayo players before him and since, they never brought Sam Maguire back to Mayo.
Still Kerry 2 points, Mayo 1. Kerry go Coolin and Shahik Park and Croke August Mayo, Coolin a 1.
Oh, the green and red Mayo, I can see it still. It's soft and craggy boglands, it's tall majestic hills, where the ocean kisses Ireland, and the waves caress its shore. Oh, the feeling it came over me, stay forevermore, forevermore. From its rolling coastal waters, I can see Kilpatrick's Peak, where one Sunday every summer the pilgrims climb the reek, where St. Patrick in its solitude looked down across Clubin, and with the ringing of his bell called the faithful there to pray, there to pray.
The hurt of Mayo football has been shared by both the county's men and women, but often it is the women who keep the flame of hope burning. Women like Mary O'Neill, whose son Kevin has been one of the many mighty Mayo footballers.
Mayo football is a very connected world. Kevin's father managed Mayo in the 80s and they were the first father and son to win All-Star awards. My daughter Orla is getting married shortly to Colin Sheridan, who's a brother of Morris, who starred for Mayo in the 90s.
A chance now for Higgins. Brian Higgins sent it in and kicked into the back of the net by Kevin O'Neill. A goal for Mayo, and maybe something they badly needed.
Absolutely, they're after getting the rubber degree there.
Football means a lot to people in Mayo. Life can be tough at times, as I discovered myself when I had an accident recently. So instead of looking at the negative side of things or complaining about the health services, we look to the Mayo team to lift our spirits.
And here they come again. Send out to Paddy Gardner. Paddy Gardner to Keith McDonald. He's inside most of the defenders. Up the left-hand side. A left-handed kick from Keith McDonald. It comes off the upper. A chance for Kevin O'Neill. And another goal for Mayo by Kevin O'Neill. The game has taken a dramatic turn.
I think it's fairly common knowledge, but in the west of Ireland, exploits are described as being mighty. The day was mighty, the game was mighty, the player was mighty.
Despite 58 years of disappointment, this summer, John O'Mahony and the current squad will give it their all, in the hope that Mayo can finally drink from the keg of glory.
I suppose for my own part, and after that, obviously, I took up the Connacht Championship with Leitrim, but I suppose the duck was broken from a Connacht perspective in 98 when Galway went on to win the All-Ireland, and I'll never forget. I mean, for years I had looked down at the winning dugout in the minutes coming up to the final whistle and try and realise what it would be like and dream to be involved in some way with that. And when that happened for Galway in 98, it was everything that I thought it would be, in the sense that you had a sea of in Galway's case maroon and white, and I saw what it meant to a county, to a province, but particularly to a county, I suppose, in the sense that you had the great three in a row Galway team at the time, who had been the heroes of yesteryear and were so supportive and so willing, the 98 lads, to take the baton off them. And I'll never forget, under the old Hogan stand, as we were taken in a wave in up to the presentation and in down under the stand afterwards, seeing the tears in the eyes of the late Matty McDonagh and Inda Collern, all of those people, Sean Purcell, who had been there from 56, tears of joy that the baton had been taken and now Galway had new young heroes. And that is the dream of us here in Mayo. We have the heroes of 51, Paddy Prendergast, John Ford, you know, slowly many of those heroes have passed away, passed on, but I would give everything that I've ever done in sport to see their expression if the present generation could bridge the gap. And I suppose that's what all of us involved in Mayo football, whether it be players, management, county board, supporters, want to see as well. I'm convinced that the search goes on, the search will go on, because I've always had a view of life in search of a dream that a winner never quits and a quitter never wins.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.